Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comics Horse Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Top Cow Chronology episode, and it's also a 12 Days of the Comics Horse episode. And today we're going to be continuing the Top Cow Chronology with Arcanum number 5 from September 1997. So just a quick reminder, if you're not sure what the Top Cow Chronology is, we're basically reading all the Top Cow Artifact Universe books in order, in chronological order, not publication order. So I always wanted to read this corner of the Top Cow Universe, and it's massive, spanning over a decade of stories, starting with Witchblade was kind of the title that that launched that universe in terms of publication order. Obviously, they've had a lot of stories come out since then that occur, you know, much sooner than Witchblade number one. But anyway, like I said, I wanted to read it. I wanted to read everything and have it be comprehensive. And so I looked online and I found a wonderful reading order that is in chronological order over on the Comic Vine website. It was put together by a user named Condor, and it's just a great resource to find out about these books and what order to read them in to get the most out of the story. So that's what we've been doing. And we're up to Arcanum number 5, as I said. It's written and drawn by Brandon Peterson. The inks are by Joe Weems. The colors are by Richard Eisenov. Letters are by Dennis Heisler. We've got ink assist by Marco Galli and Whitney McFarlane. And this particular issue is sort of the origin of the big bad in the story. So Matthew Royal, as we saw in the previous couple issues, he sort of starts off in the background in issue number 1. And you don't necessarily see him as a main character, even the main bad guy. And then as the story unfolds, you start realizing that he's much more insidious than first appears. Yeah, at first, he sort of appears a bit obsequious, trying to get in good graces and kind of play around in the background. And then, as I said, as the story has unfolded, we've seen that he really has plans within plans, and he's definitely playing the long game. So he is a wizard, so to speak. He does have magical powers, but he started out as a priest. And so this issue is the one that sort of gives his origin. It starts all the way back March the 25th in Gaza, the year of our Lord 1174. So this is during the Crusades, and he's self-narrating this. He talks about his name being Matthew Royal and how he was part of King Louis VII's crusade to save the Holy Land from the Muslims. And he left his position as a priest in the Holy Roman Catholic Church in France. And basically what's happened, the atrocities that he's witnessed during the Crusades, he says it's shattered my soul into a myriad of pieces, causing me to desperately search for something to replace the faith that once dwelled in my heart. So he's become disillusioned with his faith. He's become disillusioned with man, with humankind. And he's looking for something. And unfortunately, power, it seems to be the thing that he finds and latches onto. He says here, I found it. Revelation has come to me over time. He studied all sorts of writs and papyri that have been captured from the Muslim, and the study of those documents has led them to believe that there's much more in the Middle East than just simple church duties. And he's writing this journal as it's a testimony to the mysteries he's going to try to solve. He says the world's grown too small, and he's looking for something more than just what the world can offer him. And though it may lead to damnation, he thinks it's going to lead to a lot more than that. And kind of further that theme of him questioning his faith, he says, I would ask that God gaze mercifully upon my deeds, for what I've witnessed here in the land has testified to one simple fact. God is a mercilessly blind bastard. And as we turn the page, we see that he's on a field of battle. And one of the knights rides up and asks him what he's doing. And he says, oh, I'm here to give the faithful dead their last rites. But really what he's doing is he's looking for a certain crucifix that he has heard a rumor that exists. And he even asked the soldier, the sergeant, and he says, a cross? Why would anybody be wearing a cross?
unless one of them stole it off of a man of God, you know, they don't believe in, and that sort of thing. And the soldier goes on to say the battle went poorly for them, and soon we'll probably be on the road to Damascus, and we'll be able to take control of Damascus and drive these animals back to the pit of Africa. So Mathriel continues searching the bodies. He does find the cross, and he says, a Coptic cross. The inscription appears to be an old form of Copt. I believe I found the answers I was searching for. And he starts to walk away from the battlefield, and the sergeant's like, well, wait a second. I thought you were giving last rites. You need to prepare these people for God. And Matthew Royal says, God was dead long before the people here nailed a carpenter to a cross. Look around you. Tell me where you see anything holy about this blood-soaked land. And the soldier's kind of taken aback because he's like, well, we're supposed to be the good guys, right? We're supposed to be the righteous. If there's no reason, if we're not fighting for right, if we're not fighting for God, then this is just senseless carnage. You know, it's just killing for killing's sake. So what Royal says there to that sergeant really kind of shakes him to his core. So then we move to present day, and we're overhearing a newscast, a radio broadcast, and they're talking about the Heaven's Gate incident. If you're not familiar, so that happened in the 90s, where the Hale-Bopp comet was in sight, and I think it was like 39 or 40 people in San Diego. They were part of a cult, and they believed that the comet was coming to take them to heaven, I guess, or something like that. And they all like poisoned themselves and died as the comet was overhead. So we hear a newscast again. This is 97, so this is around the time that happened. And we see Ramat there, and he's reading the journal. So everything that we've read up to this point, or heard about up to this point, it's not only a flashback. Ramat is reading this journal. Ramat is learning the history of Matthew Royal. And then Quentin, his wizard, you know, Ramat being the leader of the good avatars of the good, and Quentin being his wizard, who's fled the a long time ago, who switched to the side of angels. He asks how the translation's going, and Ramat kind of demurs, saying, "Yeah, it's not. You know, how can we keep this up? You know, we're being chased from safe house to safe house. Nowhere in the world seems safe. We've got nothing to go on but Royal's journal. And he's got 800 years of writing and schemes here. And how am I supposed to know what he's talking about? You know, it's written in ancient dead languages, and it's hard enough to understand. Like, you, Quentin, you should be reading this." And Quentin's like, well, I have. And I only solved a little bit of it. So what I do know is that this the shooting star that heralded the death of 39 souls is the start of what Matthew Royal has been looking for, right? It's the harbinger of Royal's apocalypse spell, is how Quentin puts it. He's like, the only thing that we can do is we can stall it or we can slow it, but it's up to you, Ramat, and the other avatars of good to stop him. You got to figure out, you know, what we need to do. Because he's been amassing this knowledge for 800 years. And I stole the book so we could use that knowledge against him. But, you know, somebody's got to read it and understand it and know what he has planned, because obviously Quentin couldn't figure it out. So Ramat starts reading again. We flash back, and we see Royal with that cross, and he's talking to another member of a secret sect. And he says, to him that the cross is inscribed with the name of Manetho and the location of this quaint Egyptian Coptic church. So I know Manetho was a priest here, and he recorded ancient knowledge of this land 1500 years ago, and I want that knowledge. So you need to give it to me. And the person that he found at the church, this man says, you know, I'm not going to give you that information. What are you doing? You're a man of God. We both serve the Lord. And Royal says, no, I serve myself. And the knights that are holding you prisoner right now, they serve the wealth that I'm going to give them. And again, the member of the secret sect denies Royal the knowledge and says, you know, I swore long ago I'd protect that knowledge, and, you know, kill me if you will, but I'm not going to give it up. And Royal says, well, one of the things about being in this land, I've learned much, especially in the Muslim texts on medicine and knowledge of the body, which makes it so much easier to torture you and cause you pain. Then we fast forward to present day. We see Maria Eisenov, another one of the avatars of the good. And she's healing very nicely from the injuries she took when she basically took a golem blast point blank. And the rest of the avatars are there as well. And they're talking about what they need to do. And Marie's like, well, now that I'm healed, we need to stop running. We need to go find Roy. We need to take the battle to him. And Georgie's like, no, we need to stay here. We need to hide. We shouldn't be going out. And Marie's kind of taken aback by that. She's like, you know, Georgie, I'm tired of you being a coward. You never want to leave. You never want to act. You never want to fight. Like, what are we doing here? You know? And you can see Georgie kind of getting mad. He's like, this isn't glory, you know? And he calls Marie a bitch, actually, and says, you don't know anything. Nothing about this is romantic. Nothing about it is simple. You know, all you see is glory and the fight, and you're too stupid to realize that everything we do, the stakes are so high, the whole world is affected, right? Like, war isn't fun. War is not glory. War is pain and blood and death and suffering. There's not a happy ending. So we've got to try to stay alive. And that's, you know, basically his philosophy. I mean, he doesn't seem to think that just because they've been involuntarily drawn into this quote unquote holy war, that it means that they should fight. He's not out to save the world. He's just kind of out to make sure that he survives. And it goes kind of right along with what Marie's opinion of him is. You know, he said, you know, you go on and you want to school me about what war is about. Well then, you know, get ready. Cause I'm about to bring some war on you. And she changes into her avatar costume. We see Georgie reacting and changing into his as well. And right as they're about to come to blows, there's a blast of energy that separates the two, and it's Ramat. And he's like, you know, everybody in the world is ignorant that their lives might be over in a few weeks. It's up to us to stop that, to protect them. And we're fighting amongst ourselves. Like, just stop. Like, this is ridiculous. And he goes back to his office, and he's thinking about how futile it all is. Like, you know, we're dying just as sure as if Royal was killing us, because we can't even come together. So unless I figure out what we need to do and we go on the offensive, we're in big trouble. So he goes back to reading the book, and it flashes back again. We see that Royal is once again questioning that member of the secret cult, and he's trying to get answers. And the man is finally broken, basically, and he says, these treasures and the knowledge that you seek, it came from Horus. He claimed it from Set. And we see that Horus, the new god Horus, because the old one was killed by Set, we see him there along with his mother. And they're entering this this temple of Set that has a gate to Heliopolis. And the new Set, who apparently doesn't have powers, his mother is Isis, so I'm not sure how the son of Isis and Horus wouldn't have powers. But when he confronts him, when he confronts Set, his mother is saying, you must pass the trial. You must face your father's murderer, Set. And Set is like, you dare bring a mortal into this place? You think I wasn't aware of your plan? You think I'm going to let him sit on the throne of Heliopolis? Like, no. And Isis argues, saying, you know, my son is a god, as was his father before him. The entrance to Heliopolis is his birthright, and you know, you can't challenge that. So it's like, yeah, right. You know, I can challenge whoever I want. And they start fighting. But what Set fails to realize is it's really 2-on-1. Isis is there as sort of his backup, so to speak. So while the son of Horus, the new Horus, is fighting
set and keeping them distracted, Isis is able to go through the gateway to Heliopolis and retrieve the staff of power, the rod of rulership, it's called. And she throws it to her son, which, you know, levels him up immensely. And he's actually able to defeat Set, and he steals his sword and he traps Set in our world while him and his mother retreat to Heliopolis to rule from there. And not only does he trap Set here, but as I said, he steals Set's sword, because as Set is fleeing the temple, there's a sandstorm that's coming and burying the temple, and Set is imploring Earth Father, you may buffet me, you may hide the temple, but I won't fail. I'll return with my sword and I'll defeat those people that defeated me. And then he realizes that his sword has been taken. So that sword Matthew Royal now holds in his hands. It's part of the knowledge, it's part of the treasure that has been guarded by this secret cult all this time. So the man before Matthew Royal cuts his head off says, yeah, so he cried for his sword, that him being Set. He stumbled in the desert, and the priest that took Set's sword with a lot of, you know, other artifacts, he formed this order, and we've stood watch on those items since then. And he goes on to tell Royal, he says, how can a foolish man like you hope to change thousands of years of prophecy, and you don't even understand the secrets or the mysteries? And Matthew Royal's like, hey, that's just a story, you know, but thanks for telling where the temple is buried, because I'm definitely going to go check that out. And then he cuts the guy's head off. So as Ramat is reading this, he's thinking, wait, secret knowledge that led Matthew Royal to where, right? And that's where actually the whole story of this series comes from. Arcanum, that means secrets or mysteries, because the last line that Ramat reads in the book here is, as I slew the old man and collected his artifacts, someday I must return and see what the buried temple holds. Maybe its entrance can actually lead to secret knowledge, maybe even the secrets of the universe, Arcanum. So I have to think that's where the avatars of the good are going to go. Because when Ramat reads that, he says, wait, secret knowledge, it's been right under our noses the whole time. And he yells for Quentin to pack everything up. We're headed for Egypt. And we get the blurb, more secrets to be revealed. So it's a little bit foreshadowing of what's to come. It's a little bit, or it's a lot, really, of Matthew Royal's origin. And I do kind of appreciate it. It gives us some perspective on who Royal is as a character, how completely immoral he is, and you know, being the fact that he was a priest, you know, Catholic priest, you kind of wonder, but it wasn't, I mean, back then, especially in the you know, 1100s, it wasn't like people who were devout, only people who were devout became priests. You know, it was a way to make sure to have an occupation. You know, he could have been, who knows, his parents could have been, you know, sheep herders or something. He didn't want to do that. So a way to gain respect and possibly power, if you can move up, you know, the Catholic Church was, you know, very, very powerful at that time. So even though you can say, well, how can a priest go bad or be so evil? Again, he may not have been a priest for the right reasons. He may, despite him saying that he at one point believed in God, he may never have, or at least not in the right way. You know, he clearly just believes in himself. He's clearly very, very old too, right? Like I said, this is 1997 is this issue, and we're talking 1174 when he traveled to the Middle East for the Crusade. So over 800 years old. Guy looks pretty good for his age. I will give him that. So anyway, we do know that the avatars of good are certainly outnumbered, I should say. And so whatever secrets they hope to find in Egypt, you hope that they can kind of level the playing field, so to speak. But I do also wonder, I mean, like I just said, Matthew Royal being alive for 800 years, in that 800 years, he never had a chance to go find that temple. if that is indeed where Ramat and the rest of the avatars of good are going to go and predictably, I'm assuming, find a way to defeat Royal and the other avatars of evil and the other wizards. Again, you just wonder. It's a little Deus Ex Machina, right? Like you've had this knowledge for 800 years. You can find a little time to go and find the temple and check it out and make sure there wasn't anything there that can stop you. I mean, for all we know, the avatars of good are going to team up with Horus Jr., whatever you want to call him, and Isis to get rid of Matthew Royal and who's wielding Set sword. So to kind of, you know, take care of Set once and for all. Or maybe Ramat is going to go to Egypt to search for Set, right? Because they want to get Set on their side because the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And that's their path to victory. So I guess we'll see. I guess we'll find out in Arcanum number 6, which I'll be talking about on the next episode of the Top Cow Chronology Project. So as always, I want to thank everybody for joining, especially during this holiday season. I hope we're giving you reasons to be of good cheer and things to brighten your day talking about comics. So I should actually, now that I think about it, right before I sign off, I should mention the art in this is, it's typical Brandon Peterson art. It's been pretty consistent all throughout. I think Peterson's a really good storyteller. If I have any problem with the art at all, it would be just the bombastic 90-ness of it. But I'm sure that it played very well at the time. And the color work by Richard Eisenhoff is very bright, and Eisenhoff always does excellent colors. I'm sure a lot of listeners right now have read Origin, Wolverine Origin, the story by Paul Jenkins, illustrated by Andy Kubert. Well, Richard Eisenhoff did those covers, and I think he colored the inside too, but I'm not 100% on that. But he is a legendary colorist. He is really, really talented. So I don't always remember to talk about the art because I'm so into the stories and this chronology run here. But yeah, Peterson, he's definitely known more for his art than his writing. But this has turned into a pretty interesting story, and I have been enjoying it. It's very black and white, you know, good versus evil. There's not a lot of gray areas. And sometimes I talk about how gray areas are where the villain should live because it makes them more interesting. But once in a while, it's fun to read something that is so cut and dry and black and white. You know, it's kind of simple. You don't have to think about it too much. You can just enjoy that over the top 90s art, and don't expect too many surprises when it comes to, you know, twists and turns and vagueness of motivation, whatever. We know Matthew Royal's bad. He's a really bad dude. And we know the avatars of good are on the side of angels. So, all right. Well, I'm signing off for sure now. Again, thanks everybody for listening as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.